That's where we're looking. And as we spoke last week, it's quite incredible and quite beautiful and quite moving. So last week we mentioned the beginnings of the family moving from Israel to Ma'ev. Today we're going to have the return, as we started to say last week. But unfortunately, as you can see from the story, the way the story has its ups and downs, when the family left Israel to go to Ma'ev, they were a prominent family, extremely wealthy, looked up to. Leaving because of the difficult situation, for whatever motivation they had. Now, when they are returning, we're talking about a skeleton of the family returning. Elimelech has passed away, the two sons have passed away, they are poverty-stricken, they've lost all their money. So it's a whole different return to when they left. And this we're going to see marked today. It's an incredible contrast. However, Naomi isn't on her own, even though she's lost all of her family. At the moment, she still has not one, but two daughter-in-laws with her. And that's what we mentioned last week. Good morning, Lisa. So there's Rus and there's Orpah, who are still with Naomi. And Naomi, as we said, felt a very strong sense of urgency to return to Israel. We saw that last week, that it was literally after the Seder, at night, on her own, not even waiting to join a caravan. Why that sense of urgency? So it shows us that in truth, Naomi constantly felt she doesn't belong in Ma'ev. She wanted to return the whole time. Why didn't she return? Because her two sons were married to two princesses in Ma'ev. Now, what was tonight? She had just gotten up from Shiva. The second of the two sons had passed away. The Shiva was over. And now that's why it says, Vatakam, she gets up from Shiva and she says, now I have no ties here. Nothing is holding me back. I can go back. And as we said also last week, it wasn't just that her sons were married to these two Moabite women. They didn't want to return. She wanted, they didn't. They were embarrassed or they were worried they couldn't bring their wives with them. For whatever reason, they couldn't. And when they couldn't, Naomi felt this pull, as we can understand, and that's what kept her in Ma'ev. Now, nothing to keep her, and she's on her way back. So that's what we finished with last time, and we want to see today a little bit more details of her journey back from Ma'ev back to the land of Israel, and specifically to the city of Beis Lechem. We know it's a very famous city, all the way from the time of Rachel Imenu, who's buried near Beis Lechem, until today. And there's a lot of significance in that as well. And the distance is interesting because it discusses what's the distance between going from Ma'ev to Beis Lechem, because we'll see how she journeyed. She journeyed on foot. They say it's about 70 kilometers, which is not that far, but not that close either. How long did it take her? How long is this journey? So we would imagine there are two women, at the end we'll see there's two women walking. So the journey isn't a quick one. It obviously should have taken a few days, which is what, according to the many opinions, say it did take a few days. There are some opinions that there was a little bit of a quickening in their journey, and they managed it in one day. And we'll see why that's significant, because that will also play out to when they actually arrive, the date that they arrive in Israel. Okay, so let's see Pasuk Zayin. So it's, as we say, 1, 2, 6, 9, in the middle of a Teitzei Min HaMakim, so it's verse 7. And they left from the place, Asher Hoysa Shama. We read this one, I think we read this last week. And Asher Hoysa Shama, the place that she had been there. Ushtei Chaleiseha Ima, and her two daughter-in-laws are with her. Vatei Lachna Baderech, and they walk on the way. Loshuv el Eretz Yehuda, to return to the land of Yehuda. There's a few extra words. It's very, it's so detailed in the pasuk. It could have said it much, much simpler, that they're leaving and they're coming back to the land of Yehuda. So there's a few extra words. First of all, Hamakim Asher Haisa Shama. Obviously, where is she leaving if not from the place that she had been? Where else would she be leaving from? What is it stressing? Min ha-makayim asher haisa shama. We have that earlier in Chumash as well. We have that when Yaakov leaves Israel to go to the Lavan, do you remember it says, it's actually the parashah is called Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. It says Yaakov left from Be'er Sheva and he went to Charan. The question over there is, why does it have to, we already know from the previous psukim that he lived in Be'er Sheva. All we have to know is where he is going. And there's a very famous concept that Rashi explains there, a beautiful idea, that because Yaakov was a tzaddik, when he left, there was a massive void. And the void was, and the language is very beautiful, it's a very, very poetic language, yatsa ziva, yatsa haida, yatsa hadara. What left is the brightness, the light, the beauty, and the glory of the place. There was an incredible void. It's interesting, just a small thing, why do we mention it there? We already had other great righteous people, Avraham, Yitzchak, they also left from places. And we don't mention they left and make a big highlight, only by Yaakov. That's the first time. So they're different to hear something very fascinating. There, when Yaakov leaves, who does he leave behind in Be'er Sheva? He leaves his father and his mother. So he has two righteous people there. That's why we would have assumed there would be less of a void. It wouldn't have been as big of an impact. But there we say, it doesn't matter. The impact is great because every individual matters. And that's where we see it very, very strongly. And here the Mefarshim say, it's also very, very strong. When Naomi gets up to leave with her two daughter-in-laws, the void is tremendous. Now, the void is tremendous because of Naomi being the righteous woman and the context that she had made, but the void is also from the two daughter-in-laws. And why is that? And that's what we're going to have to see now, because this is a whole discussion. What were they? What was their status? Were they Jewish? Were they not Jewish? Were they... How did they identify? Did they identify as Moabite women? Did they identify as Jewish women? And it's a very interesting question because they had been married for 10 years to Machlin and Kilian, who were tremendously prestigious men from the royal family in Israel. Did they convert? Did they not convert? And this is fascinating. So there's a lot of discussion, and it's really not clear. According to most, what the thrust that we get is, there definitely was some form of conversion. They actually thought they did convert. In their mind, they converted. Was it really a proper conversion? Definitely not. Why? Because there was no Beis Din. There was definitely no way that they could have converted. Even Elimelech had passed away. So there weren't even three Jewish men, never mind. There was nobody there that could have taken it, so to speak, to the real level of a proper conversion. So according to most opinions, it was like a quasi kind of a conversion where they felt themselves, they identified on some level as Jewish women, but halachically, strictly speaking, they were not Jewish women. And that's a very important thing because that will play out now with what Naomi wants from them as far as their future. Sure, sure. Interesting.
Anyway, yesterday I had to ask him a question, so I said to him at the end of the conversation, I said, tell me this, I'm sorry, forgive me for intruding, I have to ask you, are you Jewish? He says to me, half. I said, oh, he said, yes, well, you know, in the war, this, that, and the other, and, you know, I went to this school, which was different. Anyway, I don't want to go into detail, but I said to him, okay, which half? Was your mother Jewish? He said, yes. I said, Lex, you're Jewish. You know, it was
something
weird.
So interesting.
You know, that somebody with a Jewish father is still sort of saying...
But that's his
feeling
inside how he's identifying himself,
exactly.
Which is fascinating.
Exactly.
A lot of it is circumstantial. Yes, it's very interesting. And see, here we have the other way around, where they considered that they were Jewish, but they really weren't. And up until here, it seems that Naomi didn't make a big thing about it. It's very interesting. And why? There was no choice. They had living there. And the boys were married to them. So she accepted them as her daughter-in-laws. Now something is changing, because now she's going back to Israel. So now it becomes a whole story. So this is what we're going to see. Let's see how it unfolds. Okay, so first of all, Vateitzei min ha-mokem, they take a leave the place. That's a very important thing. They leave a void. Asher Haisa Shama, it explains. Haisa Shama means that she was there, but she was there in Naomi's mind, there. temporary. Really, I want to be in Israel. She was always pulled back to Israel, but she couldn't go. That's what it's stressing also. And then it says, "Ushtei chaleisel ima." So at the moment, she has her two daughter-in-laws. And what does it mean? Vateilachna baderech. They walk on the way. Obviously, where are they walking if not on the way? But it's fascinating. They were so poverty-stricken. Okay, so let's it's an amazing contrast. Two princesses, this Naomi from the wealthiest family in Israel just a few years ago, so poverty-stricken that they don't even have a pair of shoes. They're literally walking directly on the ground. Shoeless. They're just walking directly. Teilachna baderech. Also, they're walking. There's no coaches, there's nobody riding them, there's no company, there's nothing, there's no caravan. They're walking on their way with one purpose. Lo shuv el Eretz Yehuda, just all Naomi wants is, doesn't matter what I have and what I don't have, I have to return to my homeland, to my family. So let's see what happens in Pasuk Ches. Just want to see if I make sure. Very interesting also that it says like this. It says, if you look at the pasuk, it says Vateitze min ha-makom. So they're all leaving, right? She and her two daughter-in-laws. But then when it says that they go back, it doesn't stress exactly who wants to return. There it just says to return to Israel. Because actually it says that the two daughter-in-laws wanted to leave their city. It was a shameful thing now. Now they were penniless. They were widows. They had lost their two husbands. So to them, it was good to move a little bit. But to go back to Israel, that wasn't back for them. That was a foreign country. And that was a very big ask for them. So the only one that was really excited to return, so to speak, was Naomi. And that's what it's stressing. So they all want to leave, but who wants to actually get to Israel? That's really Naomi at the moment. So let's see what happens. Okay, so now we talk to go on. And we say, Vatimer Naomi l'shtei chaleisel. So Naomi says to her two daughter-in-laws, Lechna shoivna. These interesting words. Go, return. Isha lebeis ima, each woman to the house of her mother. And then you see the word ya'ase. It should say ya'ase, and it only says ya'as. We'll see in a minute why that hey is sort of a little bit hidden. Hashem imachem chesed. And she actually blesses them, and she says, Hashem should do with you a kindness. May Hashem do with you a kindness. Kasher asisem im hamesim, as you did with the dead ones, v'imadi, and with me. Very interesting, this pasuk. Just on a simple level, you can see she's urging them to go back. Fascinating. Where should they return to? Interesting what she stresses. To their mother's house. So the truth is, culturally, it makes a lot of sense, especially as princesses. There were set different quarters. The woman lived in one quarter, and the man lived in a different one. The king would have had his own. She's urging them, go back to your mother. But even emotionally, what she's saying to them is, I'm your mother-in-law. You have mother. So where are you, who are you more naturally close to? A mother more than a mother-in-law. You belong with your mother and not with me, no matter how loyal and how much you love me. So this is how she's stressing. There is an opinion that their father had died, and that's why it says mother, that the king Eglon had actually already died, and that's why she's saying go back to your mother. They don't have a father. Okay, that could be also a possibility. But she is stressing something interesting here. You are only my daughter-in-laws. Let's not forget the relationship. This is fascinating because it shows two things. It's a double thing. On the one hand, it means that they had a special relationship, that she has to remind them, so to speak, that you're my daughter-in-laws, which is actually quite incredible, which is actually incredible from both sides, both from Naomi as well as from the girls. Why? From Naomi, it's special because, and we'll see soon, in her mind, her son's deaths partially is their fault. Even if not intentionally, but nevertheless, they were part of the process that made her sons die. Because why did her sons die? Because they were in Mayav and not in Israel. They should have returned as soon as their father died, and they didn't. And why did their sons die? Because they married Moabite woman, who says they should have been living with them, partially. In other words, so even emotionally, we know, even when things are not rational, when something is connected to a negative experience, usually there is a negative shadow which will actually go on to the thing, even if it's not their fault, really, even if not intentional. So the fact that she loves them and treats them as daughters, which is obvious because they're walking with her, is incredible. And on the flip side, from the girls themselves, they still have mothers alive, and yet where's their loyalty with their mother-in-law? So there's some very special relationship here that you can see already, and at the moment, they are both equal. It's also important. She's speaking to them as equals, Rus and Arpa, even though they will both take very different paths very soon. So that's something very important that you can notice from the stressing of the pasuk. The other thing that you also can see, it says Lechna Shoivna. It's an interesting double language. Go return. What is go return? So two things it says. Interesting thing. It says like this. Go return means she tells them, you have a choice. You can either go back, you can either go with me, or Shaivna, or you can return. Now it's your time to make your big decision. But you should know that this decision will have ramifications for the rest of your life. In other words, once you join me in Israel, there's no going back. It's now or never, right? That's as we know. Okay, that was a very, very big thing. Now, the other thing also fascinating is Lechna Shoivna in Hebrew, this is to know the grammar, is actually in singular. She's talking, so you could think she's just talking to each one individually, but she actually is. Why? Why doesn't she say it as a group? They're together and they can both return. That's what she wants them to do, to return together. As we said, they were sisters. So what is the thing we say like this? What Naomi was saying to them? Each one of you make your own decision. Do not allow the other to influence you. Which means, and she actually meant it in the way of, just because one of you wants to stay with me doesn't mean the other one has to. That's really where she was leaning to. So go back. If you want to, just go. It's okay. I understand you. Be individuals. And also, she said, Lechna Shoivna, go back and return. Do you know, you can still remain Jewish the way you identify yourself in your palace, do what you like. You don't have to actually come to Israel. That's what she's also telling them. Lead your life however you choose when you go back, but just don't physically join me in Israel. And there's a very big reason why. Because she says you won't be accepted when you come back. It's a terrible destiny that you have waiting for you. If you do join me, it's not worth it. So she's really encouraging them. The other interesting thing, as we said, if you see the word ya'as and ya'aseh, it's very interesting because really it should say ya'aseh, which in Hebrew we have a concept called, in Tanakh especially, what's called a kri and a ksiv. A kri is how you read it, a ksiv is how it's written. But how do we know that we can read it differently than it's written? That's oral tradition, passed on from generation to generation. When we have that, what it means is that there's a double layer here, that there's two ways of understanding the words, and there's something hidden underneath. So what is she saying? So if you just say the word yas, which is the way it's written, that is may Hashem. She's blessing them. May Hashem protect you, do chesed with you like you did for me. But yas, Yaseh is not may. Yaseh is Hashem certainly will do kindness with you. And that's what she's implying. Why? Because you did kindness to me. And that's the way Hashem operates. Mida keneged mida. Attribute for attribute. Hashem is the reflection. You did kindness. I am sure He will do kindness with you. And what does she mean by with the dead ones? Why didn't she just say with her sons? What a funny way of putting it, with the dead ones. Yes, they're dead, it's true, but why is she emphasizing that? So the Mefarshim say something fascinating, that she was highlighting a certain type of chesed that they did. What was the kindness that she's highlighting? They were married, that's very nice, but marriage is not kindness, so to speak. It's a two-way relationship. They gained, the boys gained. What's the kindness? The kindness, it's interesting, is that when the boys passed away, when the men, they weren't boys, when they passed away, they were, as we said already, penniless. Penniless and probably not so popular anymore, as anybody who has lost their money will tell you, they would not have been very popular. The penniless state that they were in, and we'll see in a minute, as we said, they didn't even have shoes, meant that they had no shrouds, they had nothing to be buried in, and they had nobody to help them bury them. What Rus and Arpa did was from their own whatever sheets and whatever they sewed, the shrouds for their husbands. They helped Naomi actually physically bury their husbands. And this we learn from these words. And this is what we call a chesed shel emes. In Torah we have this concept that true kindness is when it's done with the dead, because the dead can never repay you. Other kindnesses, you can hope for some repayment afterwards. The dead never does. And this is what she's stressing here, that you did such an incredible kindness. And what's the kindness that you did with me? And this is interesting, besides for accompanying me now, but the kindness that you did with me is that you actually relinquished all rights, I mean, even though Naomi has nothing now, but all rights to your marriage contract, so to speak. In other words, they could have said to Naomi, taken her to, I don't know, court or whatever. There was in those days a marriage contract. And interesting how it used to be was that the husband actually owed the wife a certain amount of money. Even if he passes away, they might have claimed, because Naomi still owned property in Israel, that she should be sending them money afterwards. But they said to her, we don't hold any claim anymore. And this was an incredible kindness, and this is what she's alluding to. So she's thanking them, and she's saying, you guys are amazing and wonderful, but now it's time to make the break. Now it's time to separate. Just want to see. Yes, and v'imadi. One other very interesting thing, and this is something very powerful, because the whole, a lot of the laws of conversion we learn from here. And one of the big things we know is that as Jewish people, we're not the people who are looking for converts. And if a convert does come, we have to make sure that they are sincere. We have to, three times, try to persuade them not to join, right? To dissuade them from their decision. And we will see here, there are three times, and that's where we learn it from, that Naomi actually tells the girls, return. So this is the first of the three, right? Lech Nashoivna, this is the first one. Let's see where the next one is. So we'll see in the next pasuk, Naomi continues talking. Yitein Hashem lochem, so Hashem should give you, umitza'ena menucha, and you will find peace. Isha base Isha. It's interesting, you have to look at the spelling. So each woman in the house of her husband, meaning she's blessing them that they should find new husbands. And then Vatishak Lahen, she kisses them. Vatisa Enna Kailan, and they raise their voices. Vatifkena, and they cry. Very emotional pasuk. It doesn't say that they've decided to do anything, but we can see here that there's very high emotion. But there's also quite a bit of an exact thing happening. And let's see. Oh, sorry, there was one more thing in the last pasuk I wanted to show you. Yaseh, because she says Hashem will do with you a kindness. The word Yaseh Hashem is actually five letters. And the Mefarshim say a very interesting thing. The commentaries say that the five letters allude to what Naomi is saying without really realizing, is a prophecy, is that it will take five generations for this kindness to happen. What does that mean, five generations? Because here we have Rus. Rus has a son, Oyved. Oyved has a son, Yishai. Yishai has a son, David. And who is David's son? Shlomo HaMelech. The truth is, when will you find this menucha that she says in this pasuk, this peace? Really only in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. Even David doesn't have peace. But in the time of Shlomo, King Solomon, that was the most incredible peace. So five generations, that's when you will actually, and the most magnificent Medrash tells us, however it makes sense, is that Rus lived an extremely long life. And this wasn't just a prophecy, this was something that she actually lived. She was alive to see her great-great-great-grandson, Shlomo HaMelech. That's what it says. It says that actually near the throne of David HaMelech, there was a special seat where Rus would sit, and she would sit there with him, and she was able to have incredible nachas. So just a nice thing to keep in mind, because the story is quite an interesting one as it plays out. Okay, so, yes. I know, for the 10 years. Yes, so actually, Fast, it's a good question. The only thing I saw, Lisa, I only saw one thing. One thing was that there's two ways of looking at it. There's one, like, on the simple level, it's a little bit of a punishment for them, for Machlon and Kilian, because they shouldn't have done what they did. To begin with, they shouldn't have left Israel and deserted the people. And then also the fact that they stayed there after their father passed away and didn't take the hints that Hashem was telling them to go back. And, you know, all the terrible things that were happening. But on a deeper level, we say that it was all part of the whole big picture, because in order to get Ruth to go to Israel, in order to get Ruth to marry Boaz, it was only because she hadn't had children yet, because that was the whole Yibum thing that happens, the Levirate marriage that happens afterwards. So it really, this is a very interesting thing. This is like the underlying current to the story, that the story is happening on this physical level, and yet this undercurrent of Hashem, as we know, orchestrating exactly everything exactly to reach a certain goal. But remembering at the same, this is such a hard thing for us because of the way we think, but remembering at the same time that all the individual players have free choice. Because that's hard for us to reconcile sometimes. So there is a master plan, but there's still free choice of every individual who's playing their role in the story. So it's an interesting...
How do you see the five divers from this passage?
From Yaaseh Hashem. It says Yaaseh Hashem. So either, there's two ways to do it. Either because, the one thing is because of the hay. The hay, that's the Kri and the Ksiv, so the hay is hidden. That alludes to five. Do you see that?
Yeah, yes.
Or Yaaseh Hashem is just five letters. Yaaseh Hashem. So either way, two ways. Okay. So then, I just wanted to see because there was one. I'll make sure before we go further.
Five letters, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see? How is it? It's four.
No, because Yaaseh and then Hashem. Hashem is a hey, right? Right? Two words. Yeah, Yaaseh Hashem. Yeah. Okay, let me just see before we move on. Oh, so now, just also, Yiten Hashem Lachem. Very interesting. What does it mean, Yiten Hashem Lachem? What is Naomi saying? Hashem will give you, right, in this Pasuk, Tes 9 that we're reading now. Lachem, if you unscramble, makes the word Melech. Yeah. She already is also alluding, what will Hashem give you? Hashem will give you royalty. She says it, she knows. I mean, she doesn't know on one level. Mm. Interestingly enough, it's not just Rus that gets royalty. On a certain level, Orpah also does in a negative way. I mean, Goliath comes from her. Yeah. So he's also like the king of the Moabites at the time. So they both have royalty in their past, but more importantly, in their future. And true royalty will come from Rus. And then, as it says, Umitza'ena Menucha, you will find peace, as we say. And it's very interesting because here it says, both of you will find peace. And then if you look, let me just see something. No, Umitza'ena even, is in the singular. One of you, Mutza'ena. It's interesting. It's actually singular. And it should be plural because she's talking to the two of them at the time. So also the commentaries say something interesting that, again, not necessarily was she aware. But there was, on some level, she did have an intuition that only one would remain with her. And that's what she keeps alluding to, you'll see. That's why she goes from the plural to the singular, constantly back and forth. Really, only one of you is going to really stay with me and join me. Yachid, Mitza'ena.
Is
Na plural?
I think so.
So which way would it be to say it in the singular then?
Mitza'en. Mitza.
No, but for the future.
Yeah, tough in front is future. Timtza.
Timtza. Maybe you're right. You're right. But you know what? Rochel, I think you're right because I think it's in the next pasuk maybe. But it comes, I'll show you soon because it definitely comes. There is a singular also here. Yiten Hashem Lachem is definitely plural. Not sure. You know, you're right. I'm not sure why the Mefarshim say, but it seems to be that she knew one, but I don't know. Nun is a...
Usually it's a nun-hei.
Nun-hei, right. Yes, I know. That's all I know. That's always missing. This is also something which in Tanakh you do find sometimes. There are meanings.
Maybe without the Nekuda, it would
I don't
be...
know. I'm not sure. But maybe you're right. You see, I don't know well enough. Oh, yes. That's right. The expert, the grammar people. Okay. Then let's see what about the fact that she kissed them. It's very, very interesting. Vatishak lohen, she kissed them. And then Vatisa ena kailan. It's interesting. So she kissed them, and then they all raised their voices. And they all cry together. This is a fascinating thing. So who's all crying? Who's crying here? Sounds like a whole bunch of people are crying. So the Mefarshim actually say there are a bunch of people crying. Because it's not just Naomi, Rus, and Orpah that are crying. It's actually, it sounds a bit dramatic, but it is that way. It's the spirits of the dead who are also crying with them. It's Elimelech. It's Machlain, it's Kilyain, the two sons, they're all crying. Here is a very big, how do we say it? This is like a massive mark of from the past, and it's now turning into a whole different future. So here we have everybody crying. And what are they crying about? This is interesting, because each one is crying something different. So the ones who have passed on are crying for what they've lost. and their mistaken choices. Naomi herself is crying for her bitter fate, and she doesn't know what's going to be. But the girls, they are also crying. So on one level, they could be crying because they're very confused. They don't know what to do. On another level, they could be crying because at the moment, it seems that both of them still think they are going with Naomi. So they're just crying because they're leaving the country that they know to a new country that they've never been in on a simple level. It is very, very emotional for them. So that's also part of it. And also, even a little deeper, they're crying because of Naomi's pain. They feel Naomi's pain because here Naomi is leaving behind, as we said last time, the grave of her husband and her children. She's never going to see them again. So this is an incredibly emotional time for Naomi, and it's contagious for them. They feel her pain. So this is the tears that they're all having. Okay. Let's see. Now, and one refers actually says they were offended. They're crying tears of, they're very offended. How dare she push them away? They are acting so, you know, kindly and graciously, and she's telling us to go back. What is she thinking? And we are, she's not treating us the way we should be treating. So that's also on a simple level, you can say. Another interesting thing is, why is it that she kissed them? What is the kiss about here? So this is a fascinating thing, because she just blessed them, right? She blessed them, and she kissed them. And that goes very much together. We know we have this on Yontif, when it talks about the Kohen blessing the people. What is the words that we say in that bracha? Beautiful word. If people notice, right? How does the Kohen bless? What do we say with the Kohen? Be'ahava, right? You remember? The Kohen blesses the people with love. I mean, it's a funny word there. Why? Because if you want the blessing to actually have an effect, the person who's blessing, it does matter how he feels. And if he blesses with love, there's no question that you're opening up the channels from any blockages. And this is what Naomi was doing
Yaakov,
here.
Yaakov, when he's blessed, he says,
come kiss me. Come kiss me, 100%. So we find that always, because blessing is a matter of channeling down the, so to speak, what's already above. That's what a bracha is. It's like a pipeline. And how do we get it down? With love. And here, Naomi is arousing her own love and their love, and therefore the blessing will have an effect. Okay, let's see how do they react? So she's pushed them away, but now what happens? Mm-hmm. Okay, and an interesting thing also the Mefarshim say when she says you'll find peace, each woman with a husband. So this is very, it wouldn't be written nowadays, but in those days, and people might agree now, that a woman finds true joy with her family, with a husband. With that, it's a little bit less joy that she's going to find, and that's when Naomi is stressing, her blessing is not only to rejoin your family, but you should be able to get married again. Now, it's also interesting how old they were. They weren't so young. Remember we said, Rus at this time was already 40 years old. That's what most opinions say. So, in a sense, it's an interest that also puts a bit of perspective into why she's so urging them to go back so quickly and to remarry. You don't have much time left if you want to have a future and have a family. And that's what she's also telling them. So then, what do they say? So they say to her, Ki itach noshuv lamech. We are going to return with you to your people. So very interesting. She said, go back to your mother. They say, no. We're going back with you to your people. Why? Because as we said, in their mind, they felt Jewish. They thought they had converted properly. And they said, what are you telling us? We are not going back. That's not our people anymore. Your people are our people. And that's where we want to go. And why are you urging us not to come with you? So then,
they said your people.
I know, it's very, like very interesting. I know, it's very interesting. Not our people, but it's very interesting because only people, but not God. You see, it's our God, but it's your people because we don't know them yet. It's a foreign country, and we acknowledge that, and we acknowledge it's going to be difficult. We don't know your family. We've never met anybody there. But still, we are going with you. That's as she says. And the main thing is the God. And we'll see soon, because let's see what Naomi tells them next. Then the second time she tells them. Let's see. In Pasuk Yud Aleph 11. Vatayimer Naomi. So Naomi says, Shoivna b'naisai. Very interesting. Here she doesn't say lechna. She just says shavna. One word. Return. And how does she call them?
The
Naisai, my daughters. Very interesting. Before she called them, her daughter-in-laws, because that's what they were. Here she's calling them her daughters, and this is actually magnificent. On one level, it's just because she sees their sincerity. She sees how, as they had just said, we're returning with you and you're the one we want. So the love is even greater, and she actually discloses something that she had felt all along. She had felt in her mind the relationship really was as a mother and a daughter. She didn't have daughters. She had only two sons. So to her, they were like her daughters. And here she says it clearly, very beautiful.
What before daughter-in-laws?
Daughter-in-laws, because before she didn't know yet their full intention, right? And that's the real relationship, so to speak. That's the technical relationship. But here, she's so to speak, uncovering more of her true feelings. But she's still telling them to go back, because it's the second time, like we said, with the ger, we need three. So the second time. Loma, and what does she tell them? And here she has a whole, like, you know, logical, rational thing, she says. Lama teilachneimi, why should you go with me? Ha'oidli banim b'me'ai, do I still have sons in my womb? V'hayu lachem la'anashim, that will be for you, for husbands. What are you guys thinking? So what is she saying on a very simple level? And it's very clear. She's saying to them, listen, I am a widow, I'm not married. Even if I get married tonight, maybe tonight my last opportunity, maybe, who's going to marry me? Look at me, penniless. I'm going to be shunned when I go back. There's no future with me. I do not have children in my womb. And interesting, it also says something fascinating. The Mefarshim say about Naomi that she herself, I'm not sure of ages, but she herself did not get married so young because she waited, it says. She wanted to marry somebody special. She wasn't just taking anybody. She was, what do they say now? They call it a picky, yeah? And she says she's waiting for Elimelech, the one. So she wasn't even so young, and that's actually hinted to here. It is impossible. I cannot have more children. I'm way past that age. There's no future with me. Now, we'll see in a minute why she also stresses that, because it comes out again. She repeats it again, and we'll say it in a minute soon again. That should be for you, for husbands. So that's why she says, Shaivna b'naisai, return my daughters, third time, right? Lechna, now she says again, go. Why? Ki zakanti miyaislish, because I'm too old to be with a man. Why? Ki amarti yeshli tikva, because I said, do I have hope? Gam hayisi halayla leish, vigam yoladati banim. She's actually stressing very strongly in a very sarcastic way. Even if I was tonight to get married, who's marrying me tonight? And if you think I'm going to conceive tonight, it's impossible. What are you guys thinking? There is no hope. This is interesting. It says, when it uses that word, yeshli tikva, that's where the Mefarshim take it from. I had hope. That's where they say that she got married late, because she always says, I have hope. I have hope I'm going to marry somebody special. And she just didn't, so to speak, in her eyes, settle for anybody. She was waiting for that special one. Yeshli tikva. But here she says, tonight, and it's very interesting, there's a fascinating medrash that says something about, now it was 10 years since Elimelech had passed away. And she says to them that there's a concept where if a woman loses her husband and doesn't get married within 10 years, she won't have more children. Now, what does that mean? Because that's not true. So it says if she gives up hope, and she says, I gave up hope. Because I gave up hope, I know it's definitely, for sure, that I am not going to conceive again. There's no hope with me. But why does she have to keep saying that? Who says they have to marry her children? They're going to a country which has many men. Why her children? What's the stress of her children?
It also doesn't. What do you mean? She's going to have a child now.
I know, and they're going to wait. 20, exactly, that's what she says to them soon. Yeah, you're going to wait till you grow up. She'll say yes. She says that soon to them. Like the whole thing doesn't make any sense. So why? So let me just tell you before we even go further, because there is a concept we know that what was part of the reason they were, so to speak, staying with their mother-in-law was because there is a halachic concept of what we call yibum, right? In Hebrew, it really comes up later in this Megillah, but in a very short version, we have this thing of a levirate marriage, where if a man passes away and he doesn't have children, so what the ideal is that the wife should marry the husband's brother. In this way, the name is not erased, but we continue the name of the family through her. And almost it actually says that the first husband that has passed away So it's interesting. It's like almost like his neshama becomes part of the whole deal. And it's the child is almost like from her first husband and from her second husband. There's this concept spiritually that she's continuing on the family name. Now, Rus and Orpah, for some reason, become aware of this halacha somehow. And this is what Naomi is discussing with them very subtly here. And she's telling them, listen, first of all, a levirate marriage is only if you marry, if your husband passes away, and there's already another brother alive. Mm-hmm. If the other brother is born afterwards, there's no levirate marriage. So that's what she's telling them here. That's the halacha, first of all. Second of all, there's something else very, very interesting. That why are they so worried, so to speak, that they have to marry somebody from Naomi? Because they know they're Moabite women, and Naomi has stressed that quite a few times. And Moabite women, they don't know yet, Moabites generally are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. So they feel the only hope they have is from Naomi, who has already given them her son, so she won't hesitate to give another son. But she says to them something very interesting, that in truth, that's really not true. That was only because we lived here. When I go back to Israel, even if miraculously I would have another child, I will not give them to you. I'm not taking another chance. First of all, look at what happened to my other sons when they married you. They died. Why would I play, you know, what's the word, roulette, you know, like take another chance? That doesn't make any sense. And second of all, something else interesting. The truth is, if it's, you know, it's an interesting thing. Were they Jewish or were they not Jewish? That's also another part of the conversation. In other words, if you were not Jewish up until now, maybe the Yibum doesn't even have, so to speak, an effect. Maybe it doesn't even, yeah. So she's trying to show them, there's no reason for you to stick with me. We don't have anything binding us together. That's something important for them, because on a certain level they feel that there's something spiritually binding them, and she's showing them, I don't think so. Maybe not. That's what she's trying. Part of it also, if we think about it, it's actually a very big kindness of Naomi, because obviously these were two very kind women. Naomi's going back by herself, penniless. They feel a certain responsibility not to desert her. She has nobody. And as she says, she's not getting married again. So she's not going to have family.
How old is Naomi?
So she's older. We don't know, but she's definitely older. She's not, and she says herself, she's, and we know she didn't have children. She's not getting married again. It's finished. She gave up hope. So a fascinating thing is that what Naomi's trying to tell them is, don't feel guilty. The right thing for you to do is to leave me. It's true you have compassion, but still you have no obligation and you should really go back. So this is all part of it to settle them more with their decision, to make it easier in a sense for them to make that decision. Okay, just wanted to see if there was anything else. Okay, and as we see from here also, why she uses that endearing word, benoisai, my daughters, is because she's saying, because I'm really encouraging you to go back for your sake. It's because I love you and I want for you, I want you to have a future. If you come with me, there's no future. Okay, let's see now in Pasuk, just want to see one more. Okay, let's see the next Pasuk. Because now we see she goes even more into her, like why they shouldn't come with her. Okay, so then Pasuk Yud Gimel, this is a very strong language, she says, Halehena tisaberna, will you wait, she says, for what? Adasher. Did I read the pasuk before? I think so. Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Nice,
she says, "Even so, because she says, even if I have any children, so will you wait? Ad asher yigdalu, yigdalu. Will you wait? Even if I do have children, you're going to wait till they grow up. Halahena te'agena. This is an interesting word. It's like from the word aguna. Mm-hmm. Are you going to remain tied? Is that what you want to do? Remain tied and bound to those children that I might have, I don't know, by some miracle, until they grow up. That's what you want to do. Have no life until then. It's crazy. So that's why she says to them, Levilti heyois l'ish, that you should be for no man. Al b'noisai. It's not, doesn't make sense. Don't do this, my daughters. Kimarli ma'oid mikem. This is strong language. It could be explained in two ways. I am very bitter from you. It sounds like on account of you. Ki yotza bi Yad Hashem, for the hand of Hashem has gone forth against me. And what does this mean, Mar li ma'oid mikem? Oh, okay, so Here you see it's a whole range of, it's like, you know, we all do that also, I think. We do that a lot of times, especially when we're emotionally charged. We say, and we mean many, many different things on different levels. So here, in a certain sense, she's showing how kind they are and how much she loves them and how she wants the best for them. But there is a little bit of her resentment that does come through as well. And she says to them, let's not forget, I am left here a penniless, bitter widow, a woman with nothing, with no future at all, going back to be shamed. Why? Partially, it's your fault. I mean, not really, but partially. You married my sons, and that's what kept them here, because I wanted to go back, and you were their tie to Mayav, and that's why we didn't go back earlier, and perhaps they would have lived and gotten married and had children. I would have had a life. So, Marli Mikem, it is partially from you. Therefore, best thing... Nice. No, it doesn't. You're right. But
it's blaming them? I mean,
it's not blaming. It's the bitterness is on your account. It's not a blaming, but it's actually a very honest way of talking. It's many layers. She doesn't take... Oh, you're right. She doesn't... It's interesting, Rachel. She's not taking away the responsibility from anybody here, you see? She's not saying, I'm innocent. My sons are innocent. My husband... No, we're all at fault, including you. Even if you didn't intend bad, but because of you, right, you were the catalyst for the fact that they stayed here longer. Big conflict. Massive. Yeah, strong, very strong language. It is. Part of it also, Rachel, is because this makes it, in a way, would be easier for them to go back now. Because if somebody tells you that, what do? You say, okay, thank you very much, and goodbye. So you see, this is also a method. Part of her method. Very interesting. Less guilt. They wouldn't feel guilty anymore if they would go back. So you see, it's even a greater kindness. In a sense that she's giving
maybe
them.
She's doing it because of that. She wants
100%. So that's all different reasons that, yeah, so many layers. And in the words, if you want to see that, yeah, it's an amazing thing. Just wanted to see if there was anything else. Okay. All right. And also she's stressing ki yatza, be like that came out, you know, this negative. Let me see where it is. Yes. So yatza, she's saying it's a punishment which is beyond. It's like a punishment that nobody should ever have, and it's on a very high level of punishment, meaning I lost everything, but everything possible. To Naomi at the moment, we have to realize something. Definitely on a conscious level, Naomi doesn't see a future. Really, there's no future for her. She's, like we say, in every way. She's financially destitute. She has no husband. She's not getting married again. But not only that, she's going back to a country where she's going to be shunned. She's not going to be respected. It's not like she has anything to look forward to. It's a very interesting predicament that she finds herself
going
in.
Back there, she's really
okay, so that, but that's why. She's going back because spiritually she does feel a pull, obviously, 100%. She could have very easily stayed in Mayav, you're right. She already had friends, she's been there for many years. She has mechatanim, right? She's related to the royal family, what could be more? But spiritually she's pulled. But that's only spiritually. But she knows that in this, so to speak, in the worldly matters, there's no future for her. And yet that's what's amazing about Naomi, actually, that she lives for a higher calling, a very high calling, actually. It's quite incredible. And at this point, she doesn't even know that Ruth is coming with her. You realize she's ready to leave them behind, meaning literally go alone. Literally alone. This is very big. Okay, so now let's see, how do they react to, yes.
Sorry,
no problem. Not Hashem, she's blaming herself. She's saying that because of what I did, here she says, I deserved it. It's the hand of God. That's what I said. See, she's a Marli Mikem, but really, yeah. I take responsibility. Yeah. And Yotza is that Hashem really gave his full hand. Like, I got the full punishment. And she knows why. Because where she comes from, who she is, she should have done much better. She's not just an ordinary woman. She's from the royal family, the most prestigious, married to... She knows. So it doesn't say where she, but she's also from Yehuda. So it seems. She's also a special lady in her own right, also royal family. It does say, no? Isn't she also a... No, Elimelech is a cousin. I have to look up. I have a feeling she's also related, but I don't remember to check it out exactly. But she's not an ordinary lady, so she even knows that she's... has holds herself even more accountable, so to speak. Let's see, as we go on, what happens next. Okay, so then, now, how do they react? In Pasuk Yudalit. Now, Vatisena Koilan, so they lift up their voices, Vatifkena, and they cry, Oid again, Vatishak Arpa Lechamaisa. Now, Arpa kisses her mother-in-law, and the famous words, Verus Dafkaba, and Rus cleaves to her. And here, this is a very famous, and we won't go at length, because we know this is in the Gemara discusses, and there's actually, like, in the Gemara, there's like this whole, you know, if you want to have a scene out of a drama, they actually describe it magnificently, and it says this is like one of the biggest moments in history, is actually unfolding over here. And who, and they say, Yava ben Hanashuka, the son of the one who kissed, V'yipol b'yad ben Advuka, will fall into the hands of the one who actually cleaved. Because we know that from Arpa came Goliath, Goliath, from Rus comes David HaMelech, that's what later on plays out. But here, Arpa kisses her mother-in-law. Something very interesting. Does Naomi kiss her back? Do you see? Very interesting. It says, Bateshk Arpa l'chamaisa. It doesn't say anything about Naomi kissing her, and Naomi doesn't. Here, when Arpa makes her decision to go back, so Arpa kisses Naomi, and in Naomi's, so to speak, whatever, if you want to say, state of being, that's it. She's gone. Now we are not connected anymore. Because, as we said, in Naomi's eyes, Arpa wasn't Jewish to begin with, right? They didn't have a proper conversion. So to her, now this is Arpa's decision. That's fine. You can make that decision. But this is a total severing of our relationship. And this is actually what happened. There was no relationship afterwards. It also seems to be that from here we see that even though Arpa had accompanied them up until here, and this was special, she did walk with them for quite a long way, there was a part of her, it wasn't done for the right sake. In other words, she wasn't really purely motivated. She was only doing it because she felt obligated, like this is the right thing to do. How do we know that? Because ultimately this is her decision, and because Naomi feels that. So here, in a way, Naomi's quite relieved. Now Arpa is going back. She's gone. She's out of the picture now. Okay, so now, how do we see, what does Rus do? Just wanted to see one more thing. Also, Vatisena. Let me see something in this passage. A very beautiful thing, because it says that they lifted their voices. Let me see. Where are we? Sorry. Yeah. Vatisena. Do you see the word Vatisena? Right? The first word in the passage. Yeah. And it doesn't have an aleph. Mm. And it should. Because that's how you write it. Where's the aleph? So it says a very beautiful thing. Either the aleph is missing because there's only one of them left. One is gone. Okay. No more two. Now it's only one. So one aleph is gone. But another thing is like this. Vatisena kailan means that they lifted their voices to cry, but the cries weren't as strong anymore. Why? Simply because they were exhausted. This is an extremely emotional experience that they're going through now. And this is, as it goes along, the more emotionally exhausted they get. And it says that over here already, there's this weariness. They had no more energy left to cry. And that's why it's missing that aleph, to show us that. But it doesn't mean that they weren't emotionally charged, but they were very, very, very weary. And now we come, okay, to the next one. Let's see. Pasuk Tezvav. You would think that if Rus cleaved to Naomi, now they just go back wonderfully hand in hand. But Naomi doesn't give up. Vataymer. So she says, Hine shava yivemtech. Right? Your sister-in-law has returned. El ama to her nation. And here she says, Ve'el elekeha. I know, she's gone back. I know where she is. She's not with us anymore. She's with her gods. And she says, Shuvi acharei yivemtech, why don't you go back with your sister-in-law? Don't join me. She made the right decision. Go with her. Very interesting how Naomi knows Arpa's intention, and the Medrash, as we said, we're not going to go into that at length, it's quite a part of it, but it says that that night Arpa really went back to her gods, to the point where she didn't just go back to her gods, but she went to the most, she stooped to the most immoral level possible. There's all kinds of medrashim, whatever they mean, if you take it literally or not. She slept with 100 men. Some people say she was actually raped, actually, according to some opinions. But some opinions was that she partied, whatever it was. She literally stooped, became literally reverted, but in lower than she had ever been before, to a very, very low level. And this is what Naomi is, in a way, almost hinting. I know where she is, but you can go and return with her. It doesn't mean you have to be like her. That's what Naomi's saying to her. But you can still go back. Go back to your mother's house. But now, how does Rus respond? And this is, again, one of the most famous psukim in the whole of Tanakh. Beautiful, beautiful pasuk. Vatoymer Rus, and Rus says, Al tifki'i bi la'azvech. Don't. Tifki is an interesting word. What is tifki? How do they translate? Don't bother me. Don't urge me. Right? That's the word they use. Urge me. But I will see in a minute.
It's to meet.
Yes, it does mean to meet. It means a lot. Vayifka b'makom. Yeah, there's a lot. In a minute, we'll see. To leave you. Lashuv me'acharayich. To return from, so to speak, your back, like to turn my back to you. Why? And the famous words, Ki el asher telchi eileich, because wherever you go, I will go. Ubasher talini alin, and wherever you will sleep, I will sleep. Ameich, ami, your nation is my nation, velekayich elekay, and your God is my God. And the next pasuk continues, Basher tamusi amus, wherever you will die, I will die. Visham ekaver, and there I will be buried. So Hashem should do to me, and he should add, Ki hamaves yafrid beini ubeinecha. Only death will cause a separation between me and you. The famous, famous, magnificent pasuk that we learned so much from. But let's start with the words, Al tifki ibi. Because here it says, Rus gets a little angry. She says to Naomi, enough already. That's how she says it. Enough. Stop. Can't you see I'm sincere? What else can I do to prove to you that I am not leaving you? And that's when all of this emotional words come out of her. That's very interesting. I heard a beautiful thing. I want to see where let me just see. Because tifki, yes, so Rashi uses the word tiftzeri, pressure. Do not pressure me. Do not entreat me anymore. Another word, another thing interesting we can relate to nowadays. You know, in Israel, what do you call a terrorist attack? A pigua. Pigua. The word tifku is like the word pigua. What is she saying to her? Do not make a calamity happen through me. What's the calamity? If I don't stay with you, where's David HaMelech going to come from? Where's Mashiach going to come from? Why do you want to avoid the destiny, the history, the beautiful salvation of the Jewish people? Al tifki bi. Do not cause a calamity to come about through me. She's really upset now, Rus. But it's the beautiful things that come out. Because
she had nevuah?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. It's a very, very interesting thing. And she actually also was saying to her something very, very strong. She said, I'm going to join the Jewish people no matter what. Why can't it be with you? At least I know you and I love you. Why are you making it so difficult? Am I going to have to go find somebody else? La'azvech, that's just to leave you. I'm not leaving the Jewish people. I'm part of this. This is for sure. The other thing interesting we have in Chumash, the place that we have the word pigu, is an interesting thing. You say it, but there's another place. It's by Avraham when he's buying the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. And he says, interesting, there's a pasuk there when he wants to buy it, so he says to the messengers of Fagu li be'Ephraim, which means ask for me from Ephraim. And what the Mefarshim say is that she's saying over here, I am begging you, please, enough already. And Avraham over there is also saying, really, I'm going to get this land. Just let me pay for it and get over with this. Let's just get this over and done with, because I have to bury my dead body. She's laying here, Sarah. Just give it, like, don't give it to me. He didn't want it. Sell it to me, which is what he wanted. And here also Rus is saying, enough. Enough of this thing. That's it. We're moving on. Also, and like the Me'am Leis, that use the interesting thing she says. The Medrash says a very, very strong language. She was saying to Naomi that you are speaking, your words are poigin bi kichitzim, are literally piercing me like arrows. You are causing me such pain now. Now it's enough. You've done your job. You've done the three times. That's it. You don't have to do it anymore. Now we come to how does Naomi respond? So there's many levels, layers, so to speak, to this beautiful word. On a simple level, it's just a very emotional attachment, right? I'll be with you no matter what, and I'll go with you. But we know that this is really a response. This is only a part of the conversation. Ruth is actually replying to many of the things that Naomi said to her that the Pasuk doesn't tell us in order to dissuade her from joining the Jewish people. What were some of the things that she said to her? So I'll just do it on one level and then we'll go to another level. Naomi said to Ruth, look, it looks like to you, we're traveling along the way, and it looks like Moab is not very far from Israel. It's true, it's not, a neighboring country. So in your mind, you could think, I'll join my mother-in-law, but it's fine. I can go visit my family once in a while. When do we go visit our family? On Shabbos, you know, on the weekend when I have a day off. So first thing, what does Naomi tell Ruth? Do you know that on Shabbos you're only allowed to walk a certain distance? You're never going to have the opportunity to go visit your family. That's one thing. So that's why Ruth says, don't worry. I understand. Wherever you go, I will go. I will not walk where I'm not meant to walk. If I'm not meant to walk that distance, I won't. And then it goes to even a deeper level. So she says to her, do you know what? Even if you think you're going to go back, you think anybody wants to go to Moab? Who's going to accompany you? Nobody, right? So what will happen is that you will be walking on the way by yourself and you could end up being secluded with a man. Well, if you find a little inn to stay in, we know this is where she taught her. She said, the halachas of what we call yichud, where a woman is not allowed to be alone with another man who she's not related to, right? It's not her brother, father, whatever it may be. And so therefore she says, that's why she answers her in the next words, kasher talini, wherever you sleep, I will sleep. I'm not going to sleep where I'm not permitted to sleep. But by this, what Naomi is really telling Rus is, you're making it really hard for yourself because you realize that this is going to make it almost impossible for you to ever be with your family. And then she goes on and she says, okay, so you say you're going to walk where I walk, you're going to sleep where I sleep. But you know, there's even more than that. See the next words. Let me see it inside. Yes, Ameich Ami. Oh, what's Ameich Ami? She says, very interesting thing. It's a very, very different lifestyle. When you're going to go home, your family lives a whole different lifestyle. Now you're going to be in one world, then you're going to go back to another world. It's going to be very, very challenging for you. This is a real break, she's telling her. And not only that, you're going to be very, very confronted with all the cultural things that goes on at home and that you will not be able to be part of anymore. And even more than that, Eleikayich Eleikai. So this is interesting because Ruth wants to accept God. So what is she, what could Naomi be telling her? So she says, yeah, that's fine. I know you want to accept God, but I know that the culture you come from, it's not just having one God, but there's also all this, I don't know what you want to call it, but all these beliefs like in the spirits and these type of different things, that these charms, and they comfort you. Do you realize that as a Jew, you can't have any of that? You're going to be leaving behind, not only physically you're leaving behind your home, but you're leaving all of those things that provided you with comfort. So it's all the previous beliefs, all the previous attitudes, perspectives, comforts, all these things. Elikai, elikai. She said, but Ruth says, it's okay. I'll accept that also. And then, so it's like each thing Ruth is showing her, don't worry, I do understand what I'm doing. I understand that my decision is a very strong decision and I'm really making a massive break. I want to see. Okay, then I just want to also that you're going to die here and you're going to be buried here. You won't even be buried with your family. She says that's okay. But now just to come back, all these things are also other laws. So just this is the more known explanation. So first of all, very interesting thing. As we said, the first one we did say was the Tchum Shabbos, but also when she says, wherever you go, I will go, what Rus is saying to Naomi is something very deep. She says, I'm not only going to keep strict halacha, so Shabbos you can only walk a certain amount, I'm even going to keep much more the cultural part, which means I know that in where I am, we used to go to these theaters and these shows, and there was a lot of, I don't know, cultural things happening in Moab that Israel doesn't have. I know what I'm giving up. I'm willing to give that up. That's what she says. I will go where you will go. Not only that, but she also says to her, do you realize that now you are joining a penniless, poverty-stricken woman? She says, I'll go where you go. if you have to walk in the poverty way, whatever it is, anything to join the Jewish people. Another thing that you only can be where there's a mezuzah. That's where you go. She says, I'll go where there's a mezuzah. I'll do everything. What is amechami? Why your nation is my nation? Because Ruth actually say, you know, I've already been keeping a lot of mitzvahs. But Naomi says, you don't realize there's 613. There's a lot. So she says, don't worry, your nation, my nation. And then Elikayach Elikai, you cannot just be doing the mitzvahs externally. You have to believe in them. You have to actually accept God as your God with the full belief. And that's a challenge for a person to change their whole perspective and their whole belief. And what is Kasher Tamusi Amus? Here she gets even more. What does Naomi tell her? Do you know that we have lots of different kinds of punishments? We believe in capital punishments in Jewish law in that time. There's stoning and there's strangling and there's by fire. She went to all the gory details. Ruth says, it's okay. However I accept it. If I do something wrong, I'll die the same punishment that you will die. I accept all of the consequences. And I also accept that I will be buried in the land of Israel. If I marry a Jew, I know I cannot be buried back in Moav, where you will be buried, I will be buried. So all of this, she's telling her, and now, I mean, obviously, Naomi knows you can't get more sincere. It's just, it's unbelievable. It's beyond. So these are magnificent, it's like incredible how Ruth expresses herself. And as she says, only death will part between me and you. And it's actually very, very beautiful because the truth is that they were really never parted. They were never, ever parted. Because as we know how the story unfolds, Ruth does give birth to a child. That was the beauty of it. Oh my gosh, time is way up. I'm sorry. We'll have to stop in Mirtz Hashem next week. We have to go on next week. Yes, so it's a beauty. But even just on a simple level, she's really showing her love. It's like, I want to be with you until the day I die. And actually what she's saying, this is very poetic in a way, when you really love somebody, you'd rather you be the one who dies first. She doesn't want, I want to be with you until I die, not that, you know, not that I should have to live even for a moment without you. Okay, we'll see you next week. Mirtz Hashem, we'll go much more, yeah.